Chapter 41. Unloaded lighter leaked much less, and he thought that she would keep afloat as far as the harbor. He passed to Deckard, standing knee-deep alongside one of the two spades which belonged to the equipment of each lighter for use when ballasting ships. By working with it carefully, as soon as there was daylight enough to see, Deckard could loosen a mass of earth and stones overhanging the cavity in which they had deposited the treasure, so that it would look as if it had fallen naturally. It would cover up, not only the cavity, but even all traces of their work, the footsteps, the displaced stones, and even the broken bushes. Besides, who would think of looking either for you or the treasure here? Nostromo continued, as if he could not tear himself away from the spot. And nobody is ever likely to come here. What could any man want with this piece of earth, as long as there is room for his feet on the mainland? The people in this country are not curious. There are even no fishermen here to intrude upon your worship. All the fishing that is done in the Gulf goes on near Zapiga, over there. Senor, if you are forced to leave this island, before anything can be arranged for you, do not try to make for Zapiga. It is a settlement of thieves and matreros, where they would cut your throat promptly for the sake of your gold watch and chain. And, Senor, think twice before confiding in anyone whatever, even in the officers of the company's steamers, if you ever get on board one. Honesty alone is not enough for security. You must look to discretion and prudence in a man. And always remember, Senor, before you open your lips for a confidence, that this treasure may be left safely here for hundreds of years. Time is on its side, Senor. And silver is an incorruptible metal that can be trusted to keep its value forever. An incorruptible metal, he repeated, as if the idea had given him a profound pleasure. As some men are said to be, Deckard pronounced, inscrutably, while the Capitas, who busied himself in bailing out the lighter with a wooden bucket, went on throwing the water over the side with a regular splash. Deckard, incorrigible in his skepticism, reflected, not cynically, but with general satisfaction, that this man was made incorruptible by his enormous vanity, that finest form of egoism which can take on the aspect of every virtue. Nostromo ceased bailing, and, as if struck with a sudden thought, dropped the bucket with a clatter into the lighter. "Have you any message?" he asked in a lowered voice. "Remember, I shall be asked questions. You must find the hopeful words that ought to be spoken to the people in town. I trust for that your intelligence and your experience, Capitas. You understand?" "Sigh, Senor. For the ladies." "Yes, yes," said Deckard, hastily. "Why, your wonderful reputation will make them attach great value to your words. Therefore be careful what you say. I am looking forward," he continued, feeling the fatal touch of contempt for himself to which his complex nature was subject. "I am looking forward to a glorious and successful ending to my mission. Do you hear, Capitas? Use the words glorious and successful when you speak to the Senorita. Your own mission is accomplished gloriously and successfully. You have indubitably saved the silver of the mine. Not only the silver, but probably all the silver that shall ever come out of it." Nostromo detected the ironic tone. I dare say, Senor Don Martin," he said, moodily. "There are very few things that I am not equal to. Ask the foreign signori. I, a man of the people, who cannot always understand what you mean. But as to this lot which I must leave here, let me tell you that I would believe it in greater safety if you had not been with me at all." An exclamation escaped Deckard, and a short pause followed. "Shall I go back with you to Sulaco?" he asked in an angry tone. "Shall I strike you dead with my knife where you stand?" retorted Nostromo, contemptuously. It would be the same thing as taking you to Sulaco. Come, Senor. Your reputation is in your politics, and mine is bound up with the fate of this silver. Do you wonder I wish there had been no other man to share my knowledge? I wanted no one with me, Senor. You could not have kept the lighter afloat without me, Deckard almost shouted. Why, you would have gone to the bottom with her. Yes, uttered Nostromo, slowly, alone. Here was a man, Deckard reflected, that seemed as though he would have preferred to die, rather than to face the perfect form of his egoism. Such a man was safe. In silence he helped the Capitas to get the grapnel on board. Nostromo cleared the shelving shore with one push of the heavy oar, and Deckard found himself solitary on the beach like a man in a dream. A sudden desire to hear a human voice once more seized upon his heart. The lighter was hardly distinguishable from the black water upon which she floated. What do you think has become of Hirsch? He shouted. Knocked overboard and drowned, cried Nostromo's voice confidently out of the black wastes of sky and sea around the islet. K, keep close in the ravine, Senor. I shall try to come out to you in a night or two. A slight swishing rustle showed that Nostromo was setting the sail. It filled all at once with a sound, as of a single loud drum tap. Deckard went back to the ravine. Nostromo, at the tiller, looked back from time to time at the vanishing mass of the Great Isabel, which, little by little, merged into the uniform texture of the night. At last, when he turned his head again, he saw nothing but a smooth darkness, like a solid wall. Then he, too, experienced that feeling of solitude which had weighed heavily on Deckard after the lighter had slipped off the shore. But while the man on the island was oppressed by a bizarre sense of unreality affecting the very ground upon which he walked, the mind of the Capitas of the Cargadores turned alertly to the problem of future conduct. Nostromo's faculties, working on parallel lines, enabled him to steer straight, to keep a lookout for Hermosa, near which he had to pass, and to try to imagine what would happen tomorrow in Sulaco. Tomorrow, or, as a matter of fact, today, since the dawn was not very far, Sotillo would find out in what way the treasure had gone. A gang of Cargadores had been employed in loading it into a railway truck from the custom house storerooms, and running the truck onto the wharf. There would be arrests made, and certainly before noon Sotillo would know in what manner the silver had left Sulaco, and who it was that took it out. Nostromo's intention had been to sail right into the harbor, but at this thought by a sudden touch of the tiller he threw the lighter into the wind, and checked her rapid way. His reappearance with the very boat would raise suspicions, would cause surmises, would absolutely put Sotillo on the track. He himself would be arrested, and once in the calabozo there was no saying what they would do to him to make him speak. He trusted himself, but he stood up to look round. Nearby, Hermosa showed low its white surface as flat as a table, with the slight run of the sea raised by the breeze washing over its edges noisily. The lighter must be sunk at once. He allowed her to drift with her sail aback. There was already a good deal of water in her. He allowed her to drift towards the harbor entrance, and, letting the tiller swing about, squatted down and busied himself in loosening the plug. With that out she would fill very quickly, and every lighter carried a little iron ballast enough to make her go down when full of water. When he stood up again the noisy wash about the Hermosa sounded far away, almost inaudible, and already he could make out the shape of land about the harbor entrance. This was a desperate affair, and he was a good swimmer. A mile was nothing to him, and he knew of an easy place for landing just below the earthworks of the old abandoned fort. It occurred to him with a peculiar fascination that this fort was a good place in which to sleep the day through after so many sleepless nights. With one blow of the tiller he unshipped for the purpose, he knocked the plug out, but did not take the trouble to lower the sail. He felt the water welling up heavily about his legs before he leaped onto the taffrail. There, upright and motionless, in his shirt and trousers only, he stood waiting. When he had felt her settle he sprang far away with a mighty splash. At once he turned his head. The gloomy, clouded dawn from behind the mountains showed him on the smooth waters the upper corner of the sail, a dark wet triangle of canvas waving slightly to and fro. He saw it vanish, as if jerked under, and then struck out for the shore. Part 3, The Lighthouse. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.